Hello everyone, my name is Alex. I'm an account director at Chatter and I'm joined today by Dan and James, and we're just going to talk a little bit about men's mental health. So it's something that's come to the forefront quite heavily across both social groups and workplaces over the past few years. Still a long way to go before it's taken seriously in every place, but we just wanted to share some of our examples, how some of the work that Dan's been done with Chatter in the past has helped me in particular, and just hopefully share some little hints and tips that, for want of a better phrase, just kind of improve people's baseline of happiness on a day-to-day basis. So Dan, it'd be great if you could start us off just a little bit of an introduction. Tell us your story a little bit, please.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate the invite, Alex, as well to that. So I've been involved from within mental health industry, I guess, if you like, for the past sort of 4 or 5 years now. And originally, it was off the back of my own issues. So 6 years ago, my son was born. I had postnatal depression as a dad. Did what every guy, I think, generally does, certainly sort of 5 or 6 years ago, in terms of tries to hide it, tries to block it, pretend like it doesn't happen, and then quickly just escalated and escalated and escalated. And that led to some pretty extreme behaviors in terms of from my experience, and led to a number of suicide attempts, which thankfully weren't completed in that aspect. But for me, walking through the door of a charity called Andy's Man Club, which now currently have 72 as we speak, but have another 12 that are opening in the next few weeks across the UK, really kind of opened my eyes to that I wasn't alone. I think when we talk about men's mental health specifically, a lot of guys feel like they're the only people going through whatever issue that it is, and I certainly felt like that. So walking through the door opened my eyes and actually gave me a little bit of hope, which was something that had not been within my life for a couple of years. So following my own recovery and getting better and picking up hints and tips off random people that I'd never met, together with some professional counselling, enabled me then to put the time and effort into repaying some of the goodwill that I got. So since that day, I've opened 2 Andy's Man Clubs myself, one in Manchester City Centre, one in Altrincham. I've started a mental health and wellbeing training company. So I work with businesses, and I know we've done some stuff together as well, Alex. I work with businesses around trying to create strategies to keep employees safe, but improve their well-being as well. We want people to thrive within the workplace. And there's the misconception that anyone struggling with their mental health can't thrive within the workplace. And they absolutely can. It's about finding the right structures that are in place to make sure that everybody feels supported.
Brilliant. I think we've talked before. We had that, you ran that session with us a few months ago now, and I think at the time I kind of always been quite lucky, really, in that I've not particularly had struggles with my mental health, particularly as an adult, but some of the things that you talked about there really struck a chord with me. Obviously, just A, not wanting to ever find myself in a position like that, if I was really honest about it, but also just some of the little things that you suggested are actually really like implementable anyway, whether you're struggling or not. So like, I think one of the weirder ones, which I think some of the Chatter guys are still getting to grips with, are things like cold showers. And it's genuinely incredible. Like, you've cold shower first thing in the morning, it's just difficult when it's what, 1 degree outside at the moment, but the energy and the positivity you get from things like that. James, have you ever tried that? Have you ever tried cold showers?
I have, yeah. Weirdly, I suppose, not really from a kind of a well-being point of view, in terms of my mental health, more kind of my physical health. After like a rugby game or a kind of heavy training session, but yeah, you come out feeling a lot more alive. Yeah, even it's something I haven't tried since I moved back to the Northeast, but swimming in the North Sea, something that I know like my cousin does every day. She's always in the sea, and actually the difference that she's found, it's a massive improvement. So yeah, I suppose it's just it's almost kind of resetting the mind almost. I think you come out of it a lot more positive, a clearer mind. You do some of your best thinking in the shower, don't you, apparently. So to have a cold one, I guess, you forget about everything else.
I think when we talk about cold water therapy, as we'll put it, whether that's cold shower, that's walking into the North Sea, however you kind of go about it. I talk to a lot of people about meditation, and whenever you ask somebody, especially somebody that's maybe not adverse to what meditation is, and when you talk to them about meditation, everyone kind of has this image of their head of sitting cross-legged with incense sticks on the go, with the kind of the thumb and the finger together and humming. And to me, cold water therapy, like freezing cold showers, that's meditation to me, because I cannot think about anything else other than trying to breathe, which is effectively, it gives my brain that couple of minutes, 4 or 5 minutes of just complete relaxation around all the other thought processes that we go through. We go through the world at 1,000 miles an hour, don't we? We have constant things going on and going through our brains, which is really, really tiring. Our brain operates in a very, very similar way to an extent to our muscles. If we overwork our muscles, like James said, big training session, rugby match, football match, whatever that kind of might be, your muscles are tired. Well, our brain gets exhausted in exactly the same way, especially when we've got so many different thoughts and input going, sensory input that we're experiencing. So stand in a freezing cold shower and I'll give anybody 50 quid to think about more than one thing within a freezing cold shower if they can prove that they've done that, because to me, all I can concentrate is actually breathing, because that's hard enough.
And trying not to get out.
I've got a couple of friends that I've been chatting to recently about training, and actually there's two of them in particular that have both within the last couple of months, and they'd be fit guys that would run on a regular basis, but it always would have been with headphones in, it always would have been with music or a podcast, and they've stopped doing that now because they've recognized that that's an opportunity for them to have some alone time and just start to think and have a little bit of me space, when they couldn't do that with music blasting in their ears. And it's interesting that we're starting to see those opportunities in your 24 hours, whether it is a cold shower in the morning, a cold swim, or whether it's going for a run and having that a bit of time just to kind of switch off, I suppose, or identify those opportunities where you need to have a bit of a think and a bit of alone time and a bit of a catch up with yourself.
I've never made a semi big decision of my life without going for a run.
Yeah.
And considering it. And again, if we think about the way that we're set up and the way that our worlds are set up, and we have so much input that our brain and our bodies, we can't cope with the amount of input that we get at all, literally at every second of every day. So when you think about running, when you think about you start any kind of physical exercise or being out, kind of, you start to notice what's around you. You start not necessarily concentrating on who sent you the latest Snapchat or the latest TikTok craze or whatever it kind of is through social media or the messages. One of the biggest things that stresses me out, if I look at my phone and you see all these red dots where I've got notifications, it stresses me out completely. So going for a run actually is a great thing. You can process your thoughts one at a time, because again, you're concentrating on your breathing, you're concentrating on not falling over, which is something that I have to do overly. But it's a great way, intent again, of just picking apart everything that you've got going on. So again, physical exercise is a brilliant way to just slow your mind down, I think.
Yeah, I've found it in particular since worked from home now for what, it's pushing on 2 years, isn't it, now that we've been working from home, just that disconnect, or what used to be a disconnect, if you used to be able to shut your laptop, go home, maybe look at it in the evening if you knew you had something on, but now it's just kind of constantly there. And I have that at night, I have that routine of have my shower, have a cold shower, my phone is most of the time, once I'm in bed, gets put on airplane mode. But around that meditation, you've talked before about that breathing exercises, and I've got to the point now, and it's taken me probably best part of a year of doing it every night to get to the point where I can do some breathing exercises, and I have three or four that I rotate through depending on how they're working, and it knocks you out entirely. But it's because you have to concentrate on nothing but breathing. And it's the first time you probably, from the moment you wake up to when you check your phone or you put the radio on, it's the first time you've not really got any stimulus whatsoever. And that's really difficult, because I know my fiance struggles with it. As soon as she's in bed, she can be exhausted. And she starts thinking about the wedding. She starts thinking about work. She starts thinking about X, Y, and Z. And it's even, I mean, she's a proper skeptic. She won't mind me saying that. She kind of turns her nose up at a lot of stuff like that. But even she started doing kind of little breathing exercises before bed, and she started doing like a power hour in the morning. So get up early. We're both notorious for wanting to sleep in, getting up early, going for a walk. Yeah, maybe have a podcast, maybe have a book, but more of a non-fiction book in our ears. And I tell you what, we've been doing it fairly consistently since the start of the new year. It makes such a difference to the rest of your day. And it just kind of improves that baseline. And don't get me wrong, I'm no expert in it, and I'm not kind of religiously doing all these things, but I do really notice the difference when I don't do things properly for a day, whether that's not get out and go for a walk, not eat properly, didn't sleep well the night before because I had a late one, or I had too much going on just before I went to bed. But it really does add up, and you notice the difference.
I was just going to say that you hit the nail on the head, and we think about there's a lot of us that have been working from home now for best part of 2 years, or we work from home significantly more than we did prior to the pandemic. And the biggest kind of bit of advice and I'm always a bit hesitant to give anybody advice, but the biggest thing that I always notice when I ask people, when they say, oh, I struggle for time and things like that, and I suppose the question to both of you two, what do you do with your commute? So how long did it take you to commute to the office, Alex? How long did, before the pandemic, how long would it take you to commute, roughly?
20 minutes, half an hour. From door to door, yeah.
So that's 40 minutes to an hour a day. What do you do with those 40 minutes to an hour a day?
Well,
now
I.
Or what
I
did you do?
Yeah, that's the thing. So previously, I'd be in bed. I might sit and scroll through my phone. I might listen to the radio. I go, might make myself a bit of breakfast, which was kind of therapeutic in a way. But most of the time, it would be nothing. It would just be an extra 20 minutes in bed, and then In the evening, it probably wasn't so bad because I still had my routine of going to the gym. But yeah, the mornings, I really struggled, and I've never been an early riser. But to think now that I used to get up at whatever time it was, get ready, get to work for nine-ish. And now thinking, like, some days, if I don't get up, I don't roll out of bed till 8:45, if I'm really honest.
Absolutely, and so many people have done that. And the biggest thing that I can ever say to anybody is walk your commute. If your commute to the office was 20 minutes, go for a 20-minute walk. I think that what a lot of people find, one of the really, really difficult things is you see all these, what I class as mental health calendars. So you'll see one for January. Here's something to do every single day in January to improve your mental health. Now, if you're struggling with your mental health, looking at a calendar that says that I should be doing 31 different things in January is overwhelming. I wouldn't even do that. And I've got pretty good mental health, or I'd like to think so, and I work hard at it. Like, I'd look at that and go, that's too much. That's too much. And we're constantly being told we should do this. We should go for a run. We should go for a walk. We should turn our phones off. We should do whatever it is. And I think the biggest thing that we need to look at is understand why we need to do this. It's so easy to roll out of bed, switch your laptop on and start work. It's so easy at the end of the day to not actually turn your laptop off, but have it to one side. And then when you're walking from wherever, the kitchen, and you're walking past your laptop, you go, oh, just double check something. I can tell you now, there's never, ever been a good email sent at night. If someone wants to give you good news, they'll phone you. They're never doing that they're never sending you an email to tell you good news at night. So switching your laptop, one of the other things, like, switch your laptop off and put it away. Don't just leave it out there because it's so tempting. But we understand why. If we understand why we need to do these things and then pick one thing that might work. And like I said, I'm a big fan of walk your commute. If you walk your commute, you're getting exercise, you're getting time away. But the biggest thing, especially at the end of the day, is if you remember back to traveling back from the office at night, what do? You process the day, don't you? So you process what's been good that day, what's not been good. Are you a bit stressed? Are you a bit, whatever those kind of things. It gives you that natural break between work, and then you walk through the door to your house, and then you are Alex, or you're then you're James, you're a husband, fiance, whatever your status is within the house. So you get that natural break from that. Whereas quite often when we work from home, especially those that aren't, I suppose, experienced with working from home, is you start the day, you work, there is no work and home life balance. It's all mushed into one. So you will not give your best at work as well as you won't give your best at home. And it's really important to separate. And the easiest way to do it is walk your commute. I'm just going to keep saying that. Walk your commute. Buy an umbrella and walk it.
And I think, as you say, it doesn't have to be getting out and doing an hour in the morning, but 15, 20 minutes can make such a difference. Something that I've noticed recently is kind of communication with friends now that we're all a bit, we can't quite meet up as freely, or at least we couldn't. So much goes on just in group chats at the moment. It feels like kind of always on. You're always in this conversation with 8-10 people. And one thing that I took away from your conversation that we had a while ago was just kind of reaching out to friends, and not necessarily reaching out to them in a way that you think, oh, they, I'm worried about them, but just having those one-to-one chats. Even if they're just something like, it's just a couple of sentences checking in, or let's catch up for a pint at some point, whatever it might be. I've noticed that from a selfish point of view, that makes me feel a lot better. I'm much happier knowing that they're okay. But I think we just get bombarded with messages in those group chats.
I think having kind of lived all around the country, I've got different groups of friends, and so I'm in different WhatsApp groups, and it's interesting to see how all of them are very different when it comes to mental health, when you actually start to sit back and understand a little bit more about the way that people deliver messages, the way that people look out for each other. And I suppose, kind of to take my two main friendship groups, I've got one where we'll openly talk about it, we'll openly be, just ask, how's everyone doing? And people will open up a little bit more in that, whilst I've got another friendship group that just wouldn't work. And so actually what you find is that you'll get a lot of people coming out of that WhatsApp group and just directly messaging. And I think that's quite interesting, where people understanding the different dynamics and how you need to be just to check in on each other. And they're not, as Alex said, they're not kind of direct, almost how are you, but it's just a checking in. You kind of know that when you receive a message like that, it might be that you were quiet at the weekend, or you didn't go out, or you've maybe kind of had a busy week or so, and you haven't maybe responded much in that group. And people recognize that. And like I say, one group, everyone will just message you directly. Hey, we haven't heard from you. Like, what's going on? Everything all right? Like, what have you been up to? Whilst you've got another one where people have kind of come out of that group format and just individually message you. And I think it's interesting that people are starting to recognize now, in terms of their friendship groups, how people best respond.
We're all individual, aren't we? Like you say, the dynamics can change. I'm in more WhatsApp groups than I care to imagine, to be honest with you. And it forever flashes and winds me up a lot of the time, to be honest with you. But it's so true. Like, there'll be people out there that will respond well within a group setting. We see that at Andy's Man Club. There's nothing more powerful than being part of a group of guys that all have the same target of making themselves and their lives and their families' lives and their friends' lives better by attending a group session. But then there's other people and other individuals that prefer that kind of sort of one-to-one touch, if you like. So it's really important that we kind of cover all bases. And I think just from a human level, no matter whether male, female, or however you kind of identify, is if you notice someone that's close to you that has that change, or has a significant change within their behavior, whatever that kind of might be, then reach out. We'd rather, I'm sure we'd all agree that we'd rather, if it was us, be asked the question 15 times than not asked it at all. So it's really kind of important to do that. And the example that I used when working that Alex kind of referred to is when I lived by myself, I used to hate, the one thing that I hated more than anything, this is going to sound really strange, and Alex has heard this before, but I hated washing up being on the side. I'm not a kind of what would be described as a clean freak in any shape or form, but washing up was the one thing. Weirdly, now that I live with my partner, I'm not that fussed about washing up being on the side. It's all, I'm okay, I'm a bit more relaxed. But when I was by myself, so my friends used to phone me up. If ever they were worried about me, they wouldn't say, how are you? What's up? What's going on? We've not heard from you. They'd ask the same question every single time. Is there any washing up on the side? And it was just a roundabout way of going, mate, we're worried. Worried about you. What's kind of going on? Without going, we know that you might. We think that you're struggling. And in my mind, I might not have even realized I was washing up on the side because it was always an early warning trigger for me. So I might not realize. And I'd look up and go, oh, yeah, actually, maybe something is wrong. So it's actually really an awareness thing then. And that can be a big thing. I think men are particularly bad at being aware of their own feelings because we're constantly looking for escapism, whether that's running a bit further, whether that's playing rugby and trying to hit someone a bit harder, whatever the example is, we're constantly looking for escapism, aren't we, as blokes to cope with what's going on. But it's trying to get away from that and introduce positive strategies, coping strategies, rather than turn to negative ones. There was a stat that I read that men are three times more likely than women to become involved with drugs and alcohol as a way of coping with emotional issues. And it doesn't surprise me. It's disappointing, but it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, I think we often, I think as men, when we talk about mental health as well, I think we're often, unless you spot an issue, I think we often don't have those regular catch-ups and those touch points. And I had a sombering moment with a friend, a housemate who told me years after it happened that it was he and I lived together, and he said that one day he was Googling how to commit suicide, and I came into his room and I said, hey mate, how are you? Like, just as I would. And he told me that it stopped him. He shut his laptop down and that was it. He never Googled it again. And I never realized at the time, and I found out 5 years later. But for me, that really was quite eye-opening, in that I realized that I had no idea what he was going through at the time. Absolutely not a clue. And if you'd said to me at the time, he's struggling, I'd probably laughed it off because I didn't see any signs. But actually, that's made me realize now that it's not waiting for that opportunity to arise where you're worried about someone. It's just those regular catch-ups and touch points, and understanding that, like, people hide things a lot better than others. And yeah, it's making sure that you're not waiting until there is a sign, because that might be too late.
When you see the tragedy around suicide, how many times do you read, he was the life and soul of the party?
Yeah.
I think a lot of the things that I've, that some of my friends have picked up on as well, is it's just those little things that can kind of ground you in a moment. There's I'm into my sport as well, and there's something in that I was learned from a young age in sport, when the moment's getting to you, is figure out a way to ground yourself. So like, I know that a lot of footballers and rugby players and basketball players have kind of wiggle their toes, and they have this thing about, you wiggle your toes, you feel connected to the ground. And you can send to yourself. And I found a lot of these things, a lot of the hints and tips that you provided have helped do that. And just almost kind of that really quick 5 minute reset. One of the ones I wanted that you mentioned when we spoke last that I thought was really interesting, I think you mentioned you picked up on it with, you started doing it with your son as well, was the sort of three things of gratitude.
Yeah, I heard this concept, and it was completely foreign to me when I first heard it. And it was one of my first sessions within Andy's Man Club in Oldham. And this guy that I'd never met before started talking about gratitude. And I was kind of like, I have no idea what that is. Like, seriously, I say thank you all the time whenever I receive something. So like, I have my manners, but I have no idea what this kind of gratitude is. And when we looked at it, when I kind of looked at it, I thought, do you know what? I'll kind of give it a go. And as with anything, I started using an app because I found it easier than actually writing stuff down. And there was the app that I use is a thing called Three Good Things. So at the end of every day at 9:30, I get a flash up on my mobile phone, of course, saying what went well today, what three things went well today. So I'll put those kind of things. And to give you an example, the first time I ever did it, I think my three things were something like, I had a shower, I had some food, and I got out of bed. Like that was literally how I had to dig really, really deep to get those kind of things. Now I find it a little bit more, I find it a bit kind of easier, but it's something that I've done with my son since not far off since he started talking, to be honest with you. But I still do it to this day. Every night when he's in bed, I'll ask him what three things did he, or what did he enjoy most? I'm not strict as with the three things, but what did you enjoy most from the day? I had him at the weekend, this weekend, because he lives with his mum. And on Monday when I was taking him to school, and I said, what did you enjoy most about the weekend? And on a kind of a separate point, with regards to being a dad, I've always kind of struggled with that relationship of actually being a dad and my confidence in my ability of being a dad. And I know everyone around me tells me that I'm a good dad and I get on really well. Me and my son have got a great relationship, but it's just, I suppose, a weakness of mine doing that. And the biggest thing that I realized throughout this whole pandemic with regards to my sons, because I have them every other weekend, I always want to fill weekends with loads and loads of fun stuff to do. And on Monday, I said to him, well, what did you enjoy about the weekend? And we did loads of things this weekend. And his top thing, he said, the best thing that we did was when we went to the park and played football. And I can guarantee you now, every single time I ask him that question, what's the best thing from the weekend? If we've gone to the park and played football, that's his number one. And it's free. It's completely free to do. And it's about that emotional connection, isn't it, to him? He sees that, and he's football obsessed, that there's nothing better to him than going to the park and kicking a football with his dad. Like there's nothing better. And do you know what? I love it as well. Like it's one of my favorite things to do. And I often think, oh, I should be taking him here, there and everywhere. And actually it's about spending time with the people that we love, isn't it? And that's what, again, gives us those kind of endorphins around and watching him progress as he's doing at 6 years old now is amazing. It makes me feel really good, but it makes him feel really good. I don't need to spend 30 quid taking him to the cinema, buying him all the sweets in the world. He'll love that. Of course he will. But actually what he loves more is let's get a football and get to the park and get muddy.
I might be misremembering this, but I think you also mentioned that you started asking him if there's anything that wasn't so good as well.
Yeah, I've done that in the past. I do that a bit more intermittently, and it depends on, he's a very, very sensitive child. And so it's always something that I'm hyper vigilant around his mood and on a daily basis when he's with me. And if there's times where he goes a bit quiet or things like that, then I'll constantly encourage him to kind of talk about how he feels. But he's 6 years old, he has no idea how he feels. He doesn't know how he feels, but I regularly have conversations with him around how things that I'm feeling with him. He's like, he knows that I talk about things that don't go well for me either. It's not, we don't live in that kind of perfect world. So yeah, I constantly will ask him, but we try and focus now on what have you enjoyed the most. And it's kind of getting him to start to think more positively about things. To really kind of get that focus. But he knows that, and he's a bit better now at actually telling me if something's not right. So I don't need to ask him as much.
That's lovely. So first of all, thanks so much, Dan, for joining us. It's been lovely to catch up again, and I hope some people that are listening might take something away from it. But if I think I might know what your number one is, but if you could give us your top three things that people can just do on a day-to-day basis, that if they're either feeling a bit disconnected or a bit unsure of their mood, what could people, top three things that people can do in a couple of minutes every day?
Well, I think the number one thing is take time for yourself. And it's easy to say that, and I literally mean just 2 minutes. Put your phone in a different room, put everything, and sit there and work out what works for you and understand why. Why, if I go for a walk, will I feel better? Why, if I go for a run, will I feel better? Because I could give you the best three things in the world, but they'll be the best three things for me. They might not be the best three things for you. So take that opportunity and take that 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes in the day to understand what will work for you. But why is it important to do that? Better person. Be better at work, better at home, better work-life balance, feel better. So understand the reasoning around that. The obvious one that I'll give you is, and I've mentioned it 100 times and that I will do, walk your commute. Buy an umbrella, buy a big coat, whatever you need to, but walk your, every single day, walk your commute. Even if it's 15 minutes morning, 15 minutes afternoon, you will see the benefits almost immediately of doing that. And then a joint one, cold showers. Start taking them cold showers. You will feel so much energy off the back of having a cold shower. But I'd recommend starting with 30 seconds first, not necessarily starting with the 5 minutes that I do now.
Yeah, it can be painful at the start. Brilliant. Yeah, Dan, thanks so much for that. It's been really interesting catching up with you as well, and glad to hear that everything's okay and that it's all going well for you.
No, thank you for inviting me. Appreciate it.
Brilliant.